and welcome to another edition of the Copa Libertadores WFI podcast. We've had our first week of action, and as we promised you, dogs on the pitch, dodgy pitches, crazy goals, crazy matches. It started in style on Tuesday and has just finished now on Thursday evening, or, well, albeit Friday morning.
Joining me on the pod, we've a rather large panel tonight, which will give us a little bit more in-depth look at these games. First up, we have Austin Miller, who's on the West Coast, apparently. How are you on the West Coast, Austin Miller?
I'm doing well. A late addition to the podcast tonight. Wasn't expected to be here. Then the baseball game I was supposed to work got washed out. So had a little extra time, watched some more Libertadores. And anytime you get a dog on the pitch, you got to break it down. So I'm happy to be here tonight.
Indeed. Well, Adam made his video during the week and he did call it. And there, first week, and we have a dog on the pitch. There we go. But we'll get to that eventually in this podcast. Second up in Buenos Aires, second podcast for Nico Miramont. Nico, good evening. How are you? All good with you?
Hi, good evening. Yes, all good here with me. Great contrast between Thursday and Wednesday, the Copa Libertadores. Lots of goals, good games, dogs, anything. So lots of things to talk about, and I'm looking forward to discussing it with you people.
Indeed. And next up in Arica in Chile, we have Adam Brandon, who, well, I don't know. You didn't have a great round of games again, Adam. These Chilean teams aren't doing you proud at all.
No, but at least I've got something positive to speak about for once with Universidad Católica's late comeback. I also just want to mention that I'm also on the West Coast, but the better one, the one in South America. Also
one
known
more
as
interesting. The interesting part of America, not the boring part, not Trumplandia.
Exactly.
And up in Medellin in Colombia, we have, as always, Simon Edwards. Simon, how are you this evening? All well with you?
Yeah, all good. Just enjoyed some Libertadores football. Lots and lots and lots to talk about. So let's get going on this 3-hour special.
Oh, well, you're being rather conservative there. We're going to be here this time tomorrow. And that's only on Tuesday alone. But to start, we had a very boring start to Tuesday compared to what actually happened and transpired throughout the evening. And again, Adam, we're going to start with you on the Chilean side of things. Poor old Iquique went down 1-0 to Guarani. Not the greatest game we've seen in a long time. I'm a firm believer at these daytime games, whenever the sun's up and everything, they're never a great spectacle. This one pretty much played into that.
Yeah, certainly did. Well, the game was moved from Iquique to Calama, and Calama is right bang in the middle of the Atacama Desert. Very hot, very dry, bit of altitude there. So I think that all kind of contributed to quite a slow pace and a game with very few chances. It was still a little bit surprising that we didn't get more goals, because both of these sides have been in terrific form in their domestic leagues in front of goal. Both teams have been averaging over 2 goals a game over the last few weeks. So I did expect goals. I actually wrote a betting column preview for this game. And my advice,
you know, all
was,
about how well you do with them.
My advice was to go over 2.5 goals. So, of course, it ended up being a dull 1-0 win for the Paraguayan side, Guarani. It was a professional display from the Paraguayan champions. The man I picked out in the preview pods last week, actually, Marcelo Palau, Uruguayan, he ended up being key in this match. He turned in a very good display, was named man of the match, set up the winner for fellow Uruguayan Hernan Novik. So, yeah, disappointing from Iquique's perspective. Yeah, I don't think they were helped by the fact, you know, they had to play this match, you know, about 500 kilometres from their home. Instead of playing out in a sold-out stadium, instead they had to play in a sparse crowd. So, with only just a few hundred of their own supporters there, it was added to kind of a strange atmosphere. And the chances fell to midfielder Gonzalo Bustamante rather than informed striker Alvaro Ramos. Ramos, he was very disappointing on the day. He was always offside, very frustrating to watch. I think, to give credit to Guarani, I think they set up well. And they, like I said earlier, they did a very professional job in this match to claim all 3 points. And it certainly puts them in a very handy position.
No, indeed it does. And we'll, unfortunately, we'll just leave that game where it is because, you know, we it only provided us with one goal, which was very, very poor for the evening that was ahead. And I'll come to Simon next because next up we have Jorge Wilstermann against Penarol, which gave us 8 goals in the form of a 6-2 win for Jorge. This was a rip-roarer. This was a real proper Copa Libertadores tie, Simon, wasn't it?
So, yeah, no, it was a really, really exciting game for this one. It was actually a lot closer than it seemed to begin with. When you first look at the score, 6-2, you think, oh, they must have run away with it. And they did at the end. But it did swing back and forth over the course of the 90 minutes. Wilstermann opened the account with a really nice goal from Jose Rios. They went 3 goals up at halftime. Looked like they were cruising. Peñarol pulled one back with Gaston Rodriguez. And then there was a red card for Jose Rios, who had kicked out. He was on the floor and he kicked out and he got a silly red card. Peñarol, again, took some of the uncertainty. We're back in the game. They brought on Juan Boselli. And 2 minutes later, he got a yellow card, which could have been a red card. 2 minutes later, after that, he got another yellow card, which could be a red card. And then it was a red card. And at that point, it looked as though Wilstermann were going to run away with it. But then, because it's South America and this tournament's so much fun, it was actually Peñarol who then scored next to kind of bring it back to 3-2. But in the last 20 minutes, Wilstermann, again, took control of the game, bit of altitude, and they ran away with it, scoring 3 goals towards the end of the game and looked comfortable. So it was an interesting game, a tight game. At some points, it looked like Peñarol were back in it, but Boselli, the manager, was furious, and rightfully so. He got these 2 yellow cards within 4 minutes of coming onto the pitch, and the game was over for them really at that point. Their advantage of having the extra man had gone, and in the end, Wilstermann pulled away and got the win. So a very, very good win for Wilstermann. A little bit tighter than it first seemed on paper, but yeah, a good result for them, and an interesting game with lots of incident.
This match just felt so bizarre to me because Wilstermann were 3-0 up at halftime. But it didn't feel like they should be 3-0 up. You mentioned the initial goal from Rios. It was a terrific finish, but he got away with an incredibly blatant foul in the buildup. He just kind of discarded a man fighting for the ball, and it looked to be a very clear push-off. No call came from the official, so he went and finished. And then the next goal for Wilstermann was a penalty that probably was a penalty, but it was one of those where it's right on the edge of the box. It's a foul, but it just doesn't feel like it should be a penalty, you know? And so then they're 2-0 up, and then they kind of get a good deflection, and they get to be 3-0 up, and it doesn't feel like they should have been that far up. Then you go into the second half, and then, you know, as sometimes happens, things just unravel. Boselli pulling a very real Libertadores, you know, 5 minutes on the pitch, 2 cards, get yourself sent off. It's when you know you've had a good night in South America. And in the end, Wilstermann kind of pulled away. I don't want to overreact to how Wilstermann played. I think they were talented. I think at home in Cochabamba, where they do have some altitude, I think they could be a force to be reckoned with. But I thought they were weak at points at the back, and I think it's going to be difficult for them to take their show away from home and get any sort of results. For Peñarol, they didn't impress me last year in this competition. They weren't terribly impressive in their league season. And they started off not very impressive in this match either. Their defense just really got picked apart. Anytime you give up 6 goals, that's obviously the case. I think it's really going to be a battle for Peñarol to try and get out of this group. And it really does feel like Palmeiras and Tucumán are the 2 teams in this group that are going to have the best chance to get out of it. I wasn't terribly impressed with either of these sides, even with the 6 goals from Wilstermann.
Yeah, I think the one stand-up player for Wilstermann for me was Tomás, the Brazilian. Had a bit more guile, a bit more trickery, a bit more intelligence, and
I think he's
a key player for them.
He's a number 10.
Yeah,
of course, what stood out.
The Brazilian Tomás with a Z. Yeah, he was one of the better players in a game which was a lot of madness and not a massive amount of control or quality on either side, but some good goals and lots of action.
And Adam, you know, there are a lot of people out there sort of suggesting this is, you know, Bolivian football is on the up. I know you want to make another point, but I wanted to pose that question to you in the process.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it was a great week for their sides. Obviously, we've just seen the strongest win tonight. Sport Boys put in a credible performance and got a decent draw against Libertad of Paraguay. And yeah, and Wilsterman's 6-2 victory over Penarão says it all. You know, Wilsterman only came back up to the top division a couple of years ago in Bolivia, actually. And now they're beating Giants of South American football 6-2 in the Libertadores. And one other quick point, Penarol have got a terrible record away in Bolivia. This isn't their first time they've been thrashed in Bolivia. They've suffered heavy defeats to Bolivar in recent years as well. So it kind of wasn't a great surprise to a couple of Uruguayans I follow on Twitter, actually. Yeah, I think you've got to give quite a lot of credit to Wilsterman. You know, it's not easy to score 6 goals in any game.
No, indeed. And they were a joy to watch. I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I really, really did. But listen, I'm going to stick with you, Adam, on this one because Universidad Católica managed a very impressive comeback against Atletico Paranaense. You know, they were 2-0 down. It seemed to be over, Adam, and then all of a sudden it wasn't over. Do you want to talk us through it?
Sure. Well, I'll let Austin deal with the Paranaense side of things. But from a Chilean perspective, you know, 2-0 down, it looked like it was going to be sort of another toothless display from a Chilean side. There's a lack of understanding between forward Santiago Silva and the playmaker Diego Buonanotte. It was really frustrating because the big question mark over this Universidad Católica side was how they were going to cope with the loss of Nico Castillo to Mexican football. And Santiago Silva so far in the league has been disappointing, couldn't score. And it was no different on this night either. And I don't think it was a coincidence that Católica got their 2 goals back when Silva went off. I thought this was going to be a case of kind of deja vu for me on the pod again, because we've seen so many poor performances from Chilean sides. I wouldn't say this was a poor performance even before they were 2 down. Even before they brought it back to 2-2. But it was kind of a little bit meek, maybe. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, in the last few minutes, they managed to pull it out of the fire and get 2 goals. The first one saw really good work between Roberto Gutierrez and Chilean international Jose Funes Alida to set up David Llanos for a header from close range. That brought them back into it, and then Ricardo Noir got the equaliser just a couple of minutes later. The one kind of dark note just after was the fact that key defender Guillermo Maripan, he got sent off celebrating the equaliser. It seemed I don't think anyone's quite clear why he got sent off. So I believe I heard on the radio earlier here that Universidad Católica are trying to get that overturned, that red card. So they're hoping that he's going to be back for the next game. Overall, I think you've got to be kind of positive about Universidad Católica's chances. A point on the road is good for them. And the fact that in the other game, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in a minute, you know, San Lorenzo got thrashed, puts them in a potentially decent position if they can win their home games.
Well, we'll get to San Lorenzo in a minute because I was far from impressed myself, Adam. Austin, yourself, Paranaense, they're still stumbling along in this one. Not really pulling up any trees, really, are they?
This was just a disastrous result for them. You know, we talk all the time, but the keys in the group stage of this competition is you absolutely have to hold serve at home. It's really difficult to get out of the group if you can't hold serve at home and take those 3 points. Even more so when you have them seemingly in the bag, when you're 2-0 up 85 minutes into a match. You absolutely have to take all 3 points from that match, and Paranaense were not able to. They got off to a very quick start in this one, off a set piece. Lucho Gonzalez was able to score. The Argentine kind of scored that goal, and then they got a very nice-looking goal from Nikaun late on in the second half, 75 minutes in. They got it to 2-0, and it felt like, all right, they're really going to be able to hold this one off, and then it just absolutely fell apart in the final 5 minutes, and that is all it took. And Católica got back in this one, and this is a point that Católica will cherish because they didn't have it, and this is 2 points, absolutely 2 points lost for Atlético Paranaense. Again, I don't know what happened here because I thought they played fairly well. you know, to get themselves 2-0 up. Sure, they gave up some chances, but Católica weren't able to take advantage of them. I thought the first goal was well worked. The second was a great bit of individual skill. They're still without a real out-and-out striker. Grafich did not play in this match. As well, Luis Enrique, the youngster who came over from Botafogo, did not play in this match. So it was Pablo who was kind of leading the line. I'm not big on his credentials to play that sort of role, but I thought he was fine in this match. And Paranaense absolutely should have had 3 points, and they didn't. And this is something that when we get down to match day 5 or 6 in this group, you could look back and Paranaense could very much be 2 points out of going through. And you're going to look back to these 5 minutes in this match as what cost them.
They were probably just topping graffiti up with some embalming fluid. But listen, let's move on to the best band of the night, which was Nzulia. I thought the band was fantastic, but the result was absolutely super for Chappie. Austin, a really good occasion, really great fans they seem to have there at Nzulia. But Chapecoense were, to me, the most impressive Brazilian side in the tournament so far. I don't know whether that's going to last, but certainly on the first round's evidence that we've seen, I was thrilled by them and thrilled at the one.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we talked about how this was a bit of an unknown with this club. I think you have to take this result certainly with a grain of salt because it is Venezuelan opposition. Anytime you go on the road in this competition, anytime you're away from home, it can be difficult. And any 3 points away are 3 massive points, and this is a big step for Chapecoense. If they're going to get out of this group against, you know, tough, hardworking teams like Lanús and Nacional, they're probably going to need to get 6 points against from their 2 matches against Zulia, and to get 3 points on the road was very impressive from them. They opened it up with Reinaldo taking kind of a free kick that was in front of the corner flag. He spun it into the box. It looks like they did credit Reinaldo with the goal. It certainly seemed like it came off of a Zulia head and got deflected in, so it could have been an own goal.
It was going in no matter what.
Sure.
Austin. You know, at the end of the day, the only action the defender could take was to head it into his own goal.
Sure.
You know, either leave it or head it into his own goal. I would give it to Ronaldo.
Sure. It was a goal nonetheless, and that was all that mattered for Chapecoense. And then Luis Antonio got them a second on a really, really nice hit from outside the box to make that 2-0. Zulia were able to pull one back through the ageless wonder Juan Arango. But, you know, this is a great result for Chapecoense. I thought they looked organized. I thought they looked solid. You know, they don't have many of the big names that a lot of the other Brazilian clubs have. They don't necessarily have those impressive playmakers. But they were organized, they were defensive-minded, and I think they've got a real shot to get out of this group if they continue to play with that sort of poise and profession.
Austin, Ewan had been on the pod, the preview pod with us, and we sort of discussed with him that, you know, maybe Chapecoense will have a bonding session during this tournament that will serve as a bonding session. You know, after the first goal and everything that transpired after that, it was sort of support that train of thought that this is a team sort of bonding on this adventure, and the fact that the Libertadores is there, it's sort of heightened that. I think it could be a very good thing for them in this tournament.
Yeah, starting off with a positive result is huge for them because this is a kind of a mismatch, cobbled together group of players. You know, you're not looking at big names. They didn't go out and make any big name signings. They've got a number of loanees in here. They've got guys that haven't stuck with other first-team Brazilian clubs. Their line is being led by Wellington Paulista, who's a talented player, you know, but is certainly not the sort of line leader that a lot of these Brazilian teams have as their number nine role. But I think they're playing with a great team spirit, and that's tough to do when you've only, you know, been a team for 2 months. And as we've obviously chronicled, they had to replace the entirety of their squad. So these are players that, for the most part, have never played together, now here working together as a team and coming out and getting a result that was really due in large part to that sort of team spirit. So a positive result is only going to help that. And I think they stand a real chance to get out of this group if they continue to play in that sort of style.
Just a quick word on Chapecoense, because of the Brazilian sides I saw this week, at least, and I think the only one I missed completely was Flamengo, who were probably the most impressive given their result over San Lorenzo. But of the ones I saw, I really enjoyed watching Chapecoense, actually. I thought they had a nice style of play. It's a little bit different from the other Brazilian sides that I saw. More of a passing game, and they looked to try and take the match to the opposition a little bit more than some of the other Brazilian sides have done this week. And also they scored a very good goal. Yeah, it was impressive given the fact, you know, this team has only been together for what, a few weeks. I was just stunned really by just how well they functioned. It's not easy to get that kind of unity.
Yeah, and it was the game I really enjoyed. I think it was a game that was played in a really good spirit. It was very competitive. The atmosphere was really good, as you've mentioned. But there wasn't any fighting or elbows or some of the kind of at times enjoyable, but you know, at times a little bit over the top drama of some South American games. It was a game that was played between two teams who are both trying to score at the end. I think Chapecoense have put together a really interesting team. They've got some players, you know, especially away from home, they have some quick, powerful players who are very useful on the counter-attack. When the Venezuelans are pushing for the equaliser, they still had something, you know, in terms of breaking away. Lots of positives. And it was a, you know, a really enjoyable game. I was impressed by the spirit of Chapecoense. I think, you could see at the end of the game how much it meant. And it's a huge step for a team that's basically existed for 3 or 4 months to win a game in the continental competition of South America. That's a huge achievement. And I think with the spirit, with some interesting players, with a solid, balanced side that they look to have, you know, I think they'll do well. Obviously, again, as we've mentioned, Venezuelan opposition, you know, it's difficult to say, but that says Zulia from the preview pod have been a team that's fairly highly rated in terms of their acquisitions. They've got Juan Aranjo, always lovely to see. Socks down by his ankles, just pinging passes and, you know, scored a goal, which is nice. So, for me, an enjoyable, you know, positive Libertadores game.
And one final thing on Chapecoense, Simon, you kind of brought it up. I think they've built this squad incredibly well. You know, there's no sort of precedent as to what you do in a situation like this, but I think they went about it the right way. You know, there were rumors that bigger name players had offered themselves to Chapecoense. The one that comes to mind is obviously Ronaldinho. They weren't dumb enough to say yes to that. But that sort of mentality of getting kind of a bigger, older name veteran to market the club and that sort of thing, they said no to all of that. And they took guys who had experience playing in Brazil, who had experience playing continentally, but weren't big names, weren't expensive players, weren't guys that came in with reputations. And they kind of built this team of hardworking, defensive-minded players who could go out and get a result if they need to. They've got a lot of young guys who are there to prove themselves. This certainly feels like a team that feels like they have something to prove. You know, there's nobody on this team that has really made a name for themselves yet, even the veterans. And so this is an opportunity for each and every member of this team to kind of put themselves out there and really buy into something. And so you have to give the club's board and directors and everything credit for what they decided to do with this team, because I absolutely think that even though they may be lacking in talent just that bit, they've made up for it in all of the other aspects, and they went about doing this as best as you possibly could.
No, Austin, I agree with you totally. And, you know, even the celebration of the first goal, I just, you know, I know it's slightly over the top, but I just thought it was quite poignant and just a nice moment. You know, really, you know, what the players falling to their knees, pointing to the skies. And you know what I mean? It's a team trying to find an identity, and it's trying to lay that ghost of the past. And again, that's probably the wrong way of describing it, but you know the spirit that I mean it in. And you know, start building the next chapter for Chapecoense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly where they're at. And I'm very excited to watch them go home and play in front of their home fans. You know, opening away from home is a difficult thing to do, but that's 3 points in the bank for them. And I think they stand a very legitimate chance of getting out of this group because of this result.
Well, let's hope so. We'll be behind them 100% all of the way. Finally, Nico, we can bring you in here. And I know that you missed the Tuesday night games, but we are going to start with Godoy Cruz, who drew 1-1 at home with Atletico Mineiro.
Going into this game, you would have thought that Mineiro were the favourites, especially considering that the Brazilians have become a regular side in the Copa over the last couple of years. But it didn't go that way, actually. So as soon as the game began, Godoy Cruz scored a very impressive goal after a great long pass from or their midfielders. So Glorikrus find themselves winning a game which they weren't expecting to at a very early stage in the game. After that, Mineiro got possession of the ball and tried to play it, but didn't really know what to do with it. It was a very strange game because Glorikrus were not the favourites. They don't have the same amount of resources that the Brazilians have. And they haven't been particularly spectacular at a local level. And considering that the Brazilians have names like Robinho, Elias, Marcos Rocha, such an impressive side, which you would thought should have done better against the Argentine team. Very good point for Glorikrus, in my opinion. Wasn't expecting them to win, obviously, but a draw is always acceptable. They played very good. They surprised me. It was a very intelligent play. They made use of their resources. I don't know. We might be surprised by this Argentinian side after all.
This match was everything that was wrong with Atlético Mineiro last year, kind of in a nutshell. They were one of the best goal-scoring teams in Brazil, but they really struggled on the defensive end. And that reared its ugly head 2 minutes into this one. About as inauspicious of a start as you can get in a competition. They find themselves 1-0 down 2 minutes in. But from there, they did all right. They won a penalty early on in the second half. Fredji made no doubt about it. Got them back to 1-1. They couldn't get anything beyond that. This is not the type of performance that Mineiro can repeat. But I think this is a type of performance that they can probably live with. They've gotten a kind draw in the group, I think, with the other members. And so Mineiro will probably be fine. But I think there are some question marks going forward. It's the defense is one. Yet again, Gabriel and Leonardo Silva were difficult, to say the least, on the back line. And that cost them the goal. And it just feels like there's sometimes just too many bodies in the midfield for Gallo. And they have so many talented players that it just seems like it should work better than it actually does. Robinho has really thrived in his role on the wing. Fredji is still a top-tier South American striker. I'm a big fan of both Otero and Juan Cáceres, the Venezuelan and Ecuadorian respectively. I think they're talented players, but there's not really room for all of them on the pitch, so Cáceres usually has to come off the bench in kind of a substitutes role. Elias is a great defensive midfielder. There's so much talent that, you know, this type of 1-1 draw really shouldn't be happening. But it just kind of feels like Mineiro are still working through how to best play together. And if it does all click, then I think watch out because there is so much attacking talent on this squad. But if it doesn't, the defense is not going to be strong enough to get them out of this group on its own merit.
Yeah, like you say, that they do have the material to really dominate the group. But at certain times, it just seems like they don't know what to do with the ball. They have it, and if you look at the stats, they had 63% possession and yet couldn't find a second goal. So Glorikrus were very comfortable with the position they adapted, and they just let them have the ball, and yeah, it worked out for them.
Yeah, I thought Glorikrus approached this match very well. They got the early goal. You know, it's always difficult to then give that back, but 1-1 is a good result for them. Yeah, and I'm with you there on that, Nico. I just think Gallo kind of felt like, I think Gallo and Santos kind of had the same type of performances in this first group stage match. And we'll get to Santos in a bit, but where it just felt like with the pieces that are there, it should be more. And you can overlook one of these performances, like I said, but if Gallo go and then do this again, you know, then I think they're going to be in some trouble because this group seems like it's going to be forgiving with Libertad and Sport Boys as the other two teams, but you never know what's going to happen in this competition. So Atlético Mineiro need to bounce back well in their next match.
So would you say, Austin, that a point's a bad result for Mineiro? You know, normally we say get a point in the road. This is a bad point, you say?
I think so, yeah. I think they would have expected 3 points from this. You know, this is, as I said, this is a forgiving group for them. So I don't think it's going to come back to haunt them. But I think 3 points should have been the goal here. But if they go and get 3 points with their other two away matches, then they'll be fine.
No, indeed. And we'll move on to Sport Boy Libertad, which was a 3-3 draw, which I missed because it clashed with ABC's clash with Sao Paulo and the Copa de Brazil. So, Adam, you're going to talk us through the Sport Boy Libertad 6-goal thriller. Plenty of action to talk about. Far away.
Yeah, it was a really entertaining end-to-end match. Libertad took the lead 3 times, but were pegged back by the Bolivian side's doggedness in this game. There was one player who really stood out in this match, and it's certainly a player I'm excited to see again in this competition. It was the number 10 for Sport Boys Warns, and that's Alexis Messidoro. So Messidoro. He's on loan from Boca, and I think he could be a name to remember. It's not going to be an easy name to forget. Obviously, his nickname is Messi, and everything went through him. Everything. I've never, in this week at least, I don't think I heard a player's name mentioned on the commentary quite as much as I did Messidoro. Every Sport Boys attack went through him. He was involved in a couple of the goals, scored one himself. And it would actually be interesting to see if he is more closely marked in the next match. Libertad, they played pretty well in parts, but, you know, as the scoreline suggests, They were weak at the back, which is not something you necessarily associate with Paraguayan sides in the Libertadores. But I think Sport Boys will be a difficult side to play against away from home for the other sides in this group anyway. Even though they don't have the altitude advantage like most Bolivian sides do, what they do have is like a very physical style of play, and like I say, with that number 10 Alexis Messidoro, they've got somebody who has a little something special about him.
I'm going to bring Nico in on this one because he's a big Boca Juniors fan. He might be able to enlighten us a little bit more and also a little bit about the game. Nico?
Yeah, Alexis Messidoro, obviously nicknamed Messi, a great product from the Boca Juniors Youth Academy. Although he didn't show a lot of quality when featured in the first team last year, he should have been his contract should have been renewed last season. But after a stupid move by the leaders of the club, he was sent on loan to Sport Boys, and his relationship with the club will clearly not be the same after this, because he declared that he wanted to stay. And he still was sent on loan to Bolivia. So not a great move by Boca, that, considering that he could be a potential number 10 in the future, something that Boca Juniors have been missing since Riquelme left. So it looks like he's doing all right in Bolivia at the moment. He did play well against Libertad, I saw it as well. Impressive display by the little man. And hopefully we'll see more of him in this Copa. I told you we should have kept an eye on Sport Boys because they were going to do well. So I'm happy that they played that well against the Paraguayan side.
Indeed. Well, sticking with you, Nico, the next game up on the list is another Argentinian side, Atletico Tucumán, who went up against the beloved love of his life of Austin Miller, Palmeiras, who went down to 10 men and still managed to come away with a draw. I know we're going to be spending a lot of time on this game, Nico, so feel free to start us off.
The club we all love, Atletico Tucumán, facing Palmeiras, the Brazilian champions. A great game, especially the first game of the Tucumanos in the Copa Libertadores. A very special event, something that they will remember forever. The same as Godoy Cruz. They come up against the Brazilian powerhouse, who have recently signed some of the best talent in the continent. Brought Felipe Melo back from Europe, have Michel Bastos, Borja, Lobito Guerra. A very difficult team to play against, especially in your first major continental match, but they did really well. They actually did. I won't say they dominated the match, but of course they did fairly well. They had 66% possession, which is amazing. They had more shots on goal, pretty much like Godoy Cruz did. They knew that they weren't going to be superior to their rival, so they kind of just did their business and got their point. At some point, I think that they could have won this match, but it didn't work out for them in the end.
And Austin, I was actually quite disappointed. Now, I didn't see the whole game because I watched the Flamengo game, but I saw the highlights today here, on ESPN. And Palmeiras looked a shadow of themselves of what we've seen in the league, in my opinion. I'm curious to see what you think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people are operating under this assumption that Palmeiras were some sort of world beaters last year. I think they were the best side in Brazil, and I think they were the deserved champions, but they never really went out and ran teams off the pitch. You know, I think they only had a couple of big blowout kind of multi-goal wins last campaign. They'll sit back, defend, counter, win 1-0, win 2-1 if they have to. And it kind of felt like that was the game plan going into this match. They were going to take their opportunities. They weren't going to try to dominate possession. And then something that was an issue at the start of last season and was an issue in the Libertadores campaign last year, the defense came up and really hurt Palmeiras. Vitor Hugo got one yellow card in the 19th minute and then went into just not a very intelligent challenge at the midfield. Kind of dove in late for a ball with his head and knocked heads with the Tucumán player, got his second yellow card and was sent off. So Palmeiras played 70 minutes of this match with 10 men. Pretty much straight after that, Tucumán took the lead through Zampedri, their striker. Edu Dracena, the other center back for Palmeiras, was kind of in on the action as well. Kind of a tough break for Verdão. Zampedri's hit kind of careened. There might have been a deflection from Edu Dracena, but it went off the post and then in. Fernando Prass was beaten without any sort of chance. But then Palmeiras were able to get one back just before halftime. They had a set piece that ended up with Cano getting free in the six-yard box and kind of slamming one home to bring this back to one. And then I thought they really defended their way out of this game well in the second half. Important to note, Palmeiras played without Yerry Mina, their best defender, who in his last Libertadores game last year with Santa Fe picked up a red card. So he was serving a red card suspension in this match, so he did not play. Obviously, in their next match next week, Vitor Hugo will serve the red card suspension. I think the most disappointing aspect of this for Palmeiras was probably the performance of Miguel Borja. And we saw this a little bit with Nacional last year. He would have a match or two where he just wasn't on and he would waste chances. And he had two really good chances for Verdão that ended up getting hit straight at the Tucumán goalkeeper, Luchetti, who was able to make saves. Chances that Borja probably should have finished. So this was a match that I think both teams could have certainly won. A bit like Atlético Mineiro, I think this is a point for Palmeiras that is okay. It kind of always felt like this was going to be their most difficult group stage match. The atmosphere in Tucumán was incredible. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. It was electric. The fans are so close to the pitch there. They really got into it. So for Palmeiras to be able to leave playing with 10 men for 70 minutes to get a 1-1 result, I think they'll take. Next week, they've got a Bolivian side coming to the Allianz Parque. That is where Palmeiras should be able to score some goals. You'd look for a 2-0 or a 3-0 in that match. If they don't perform well in that match, then I would maybe start to panic. But I think this is a decent result. Again, 10 men for 70 minutes. You'll take the point and go home. We'll see what happens next week.
Yeah, well, I was checking some social media after this game in Brazil, and I did notice that the Palmeiras fans were pretty unhappy with the performance, and some of them were even calling for the manager's head, even at this stage.
Madness, absolute madness.
I can sort of see the point, to be honest. I thought they were disappointing. That's the word I used. When we come into the Copa Libertadores, you expect something from, you know, the champions of Brazil to maybe get you excited, but they just seemed a little bit one-dimensional to me. You know, they seemed quite reliant on set pieces. They were a little bit dirty, out of possession as well. The game, they made the game very stop-start at times. We've heard from a few people, Ewan on this pod last week as well. I'd be interested to hear his views on their performance as well, because, you know, he seemed confident that they can win this competition. On this evidence, I think that's unlikely from what I saw. I do take Austin's point that they were arguably without their best player, Yerry Mina, who I'm a big fan of. But, you know, Tucumán for me should have won this game, but they had a great chance late on. Having said that, you know, Borja did miss a couple of gilt edge opportunities for Palmeiras as well. But for me, I just feel like Brazilian sides come into the Libertadores a little bit overhyped. It's not too dissimilar to, you're going to hate this, but not too dissimilar to kind of English Premier League sides in the Champions League. A lot of hype and not too much substance on the pitch. But it's early days in the competition, to be fair. And the Brazilian sides have gone unbeaten this week. On this evidence, Palmeiras have a long way to go.
Yeah, I think I would definitely agree with that. I think this was a Palmeiras team that this was kind of the style of play that won them the title last year. Obviously, a change in managers. Cuca decided to leave. Eduardo Baptista is the new manager. Palmeiras fans have been incredibly short-tempered with him. Absent-mindedly short-tempered. It's been a couple of months. Give him a little bit of time to work. But they're very keen. They don't want another early Libertadores exit like what happened last year. And you can't fault them for that, I guess. But, you know, I thought they managed this game well. And I think that was kind of what this match called for. I'm very interested to see what happens next week because they're going up against a Wilstermann side that I think is going to be ripe at the defense. I think Palmeiras should be able to take the match to them, should be able to win fairly handily, you know, 2-0, 3-1, something along those lines. So I think that will be the point when I would really evaluate this Palmeiras side. If they struggle there, then I think you can start to raise the red flags. But to take a point from this match, especially given the circumstances, I think it's a result that they can be happy with.
Well, listen, we'll see what happens with them in their next game. But we're going to move on. I think Simon and I are going to look at this one. Another Brazilian side. Flamengo won 4-0 against what I would class as a pitiful San Lorenzo side. Really, the first goal, the goalkeeper was, I don't know what he was doing. I don't know where he was. He basically had they had an open net basically to shoot into. And the game sort of took on that theme. There was a magnificent crowd in the Maracanã. A fantastic mosaic around the stadium to start off with. Great atmosphere. And, you know, in Brazil today, people are shouting about Flamengo and this big result and whatnot. But Simon, for my money, San Lorenzo were just, they were poor. Very, very, especially defensively. There was absolutely no attempt to even press. Two of the goals were from long range, just basically because there was absolutely no press on our pressure, but on Flamengo players. And I think that this result absolutely flatters Flamengo. Don't get me wrong, they did the job. They missed a penalty as well in the process. But I'm not really that impressed. What stood out for me more was just how pitiful, and I mean pitiful, San Lorenzo were.
Yeah, I mean, for example, what I would say is the first half was relatively even. It was, you know, it wasn't overwhelmingly Flamengo. And really what happened is the free kick changed a lot of the balance of the game. The Diego's free kick was perfectly taken, little, you know, short step, short run up, little clip over the wall, which was great. But then you look at the replay and it's, well, that's gone right down the middle of the goal at a relatively slow speed.
A static goalkeeper that didn't even move.
Yeah, exactly. And the goalkeeper's still a long way away from it. And you think, what has gone on there? And I think some of the Flamengo players in the wall moved a little bit and he was still trying to arrange the wall, but that was really poor. And the second goal, Miguel Trauco, was, you know, a great strike. But again, you look at it and you think, well, it's the keeper's not moved. He's gone right down the middle. And then the third goal, again, it's very close range.
What was he doing? What was the keeper doing?
It's just gone through him again. So I think what happened with San Lorenzo is they really struggled after they conceded that goal. The defence, obviously, they got Colaccini in the defence. The goalkeeper looked a bit shaky. They definitely collapsed. I think they kind of struggled with the athleticism of Flamengo. Again, I wasn't overwhelmingly impressed by Flamengo particularly. They have a few dangerous players, a few interesting players, some pace out wide, you know. So there's definitely some positives for Flamengo. But again, San Lorenzo were pretty poor and they collapsed completely once they conceded. Didn't really pose a threat greatly in the second half, and Flamengo ran away with it. So yeah, I wouldn't draw too many strong conclusions from this game. They got a 4-0 win at home. The atmosphere was amazing. But I definitely think San Lorenzo, I think you're right, San Lorenzo definitely helped allow that to happen.
Simon, would you feel as well, maybe, you know, we spoke last week with Nico as well about the fact that the lack of competitive football for Argentinian sides. Do you think that's somewhat played into this result?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, they look flat, really, I would say. They definitely, you know, didn't really compete towards the second half. Perhaps it was fitness. You know, they definitely looked like they were off the pace towards the end of the game. And the goalkeeper looked like he was still on holiday for the goal. So, yeah, maybe they'll come better. Maybe with game experience, they'll bring it together. You know, I don't think they were terrible in the first half. I think there was a bit of a collapse in the second half. The legs looked to have gone a bit towards the end. So, you know, maybe with some more games, maybe with a more positive start to the game, rewarded for some of their pressure, maybe the team will perform better. I wouldn't write them off, but I wouldn't also use this result to massively back Flamengo. Although it looks great on paper, again, I think it perhaps flattered them a little bit. They were a bit fortunate with some of the goals.
Yeah, and, you know, Adam had said earlier on, and I zipped my lip until we got to here, basically, that, you know, he thought that basically Flamengo probably were outshining Chapecó. But for me, Chapecó were the outstanding Brazilian side, you know, this week. I don't think, you know, that San Lorenzo gave any sort of a challenge to Flamengo, certainly not in the second half, as you rightly said. I think Chapecoense were the best Brazilian side that we saw in this round.
Yeah, I think they looked organised. They had to work very hard for their result, whereas San Lorenzo didn't really put the pressure on Flamengo as much. So, yeah, you know, I would tend to agree with that. But, you know, we'll see. I think Flamengo probably have more to come. Obviously, yeah. A 4-0 win is pretty good. But I think they'll face tougher opposition and then it'll be a more telling test for them. And I think we'll see really where they are. But, yeah, San Lorenzo have got to be very disappointed to have collapsed towards the end and gone away 4-0 defeat in the first game.
I think the team that is probably going to take the most from this result is probably Universidad Católica, because they're in the same group as Flamengo and San Lorenzo. And on the evidence from this first set of matches, it looks like Flamengo might be a step ahead of the other three teams in this group. But I think Católica can look at San Lorenzo and say to themselves, hey, That's a side that we can have a go at, and we might have a chance to get out of this group looking at how poor San Lorenzo played and just seeing if that'll continue on. So I think this result kind of buoys, and even Paranaense as well, even with the disappointing result for them, I think this gives, it feels like it's going to be a three-team fight for that final spot coming out of this group.
You think Palmeiras or Flamengo are that good, Austin? Because
I don't think,
you know,
I've seen
them a couple of times in the state leagues here. And don't get me wrong, that kid Gabriel seems to be quite good. They're just not fantastic, in my opinion. And, I think that if San Lorenzo had put up any type of a fight, we'd be looking at a different result here.
I think Flamengo, I don't think they're necessarily put it on paper. They're the favorites of this competition. But I do think they are at a level that is higher than the other teams in this group. And especially if they are able to play their other two matches at the Maracanã, I think they're going to be a difficult team to beat there. You could probably see them dropping points away once or twice, but I think they're going to win this group and probably pretty easily.
No, and I think a word of congratulations for having the Maracanã ready, to be honest with you. I didn't see it coming at all.
It was fantastic. You called it all. Absolutely fantastic to see a Libertadores match back at the Maracanã. It's the way things should be. Libertadores football in Rio has to be at the Maracanã, and I'm very happy that Flamengo were able to play a big part in making that happen.
No, I agree with you fully. You know, it deserves to be. You know, and the crowd and that mosaic and everything. It was a wonderful night there. But just with the economics and so on here in the country at the moment, we discussed this in one of the preview pods or one of the South American shows, Austin. I didn't think it would be ready this side of Christmas. And, you know, fair play to them for getting it ready, because it was a mess about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, 100%. And they don't have an agreement in place yet on if their other two group stage matches will take place there. But on the evidence of this one, I think they'd be foolish not to. And so I think Flamengo are going to rightfully do everything they can to play their big matches at the Maracanã. And that's the way it should be.
No, it makes economic sense as well, perfect economic sense. And also, you know, like, it doesn't get an awful lot of games there, not half as many as it deserves. But listen, moving on, I'll stick with you, Austin, because we move into tonight and Zamora lost 2-0 at home to Grêmio, another Brazilian side. I watched the majority of this one. Grêmio got the job done. Wasn't the most inspiring match of the week, but another Brazilian success, basically.
It was professional from Grêmio, I think is what it was. They were very shaky in the first 15 minutes of this match. And Zamora probably should have scored in that time frame. And when they didn't, I think Grêmio were really able to find their footing. And from there, they just went on. They scored goals that bookended halftime. Leo Mora right before the halftime whistle. And then Luan on a pretty clear penalty, pocketed home to make it 2-0. I really like this Grêmio side. They're missing their best defender right now, Pedro Jeromel. If he can get back healthy, I think he and Walter Koeneman make a very good defensive pairing. I love the stable of attackers that they've built. Miller Bolaños is a player that I really enjoy. Luan is one of my favorite players playing in Brazil right now. And coming off the bench now, they have Lucas Barrios, who never really found his footing at Palmeiras, got his contract rescinded with Verdão so that he could move to Grêmio and sign a one-year deal and play in the Libertadores with them. He's a player that I really like. I think he still has a lot. And so this is a really, really talented Grêmio side. This was professional from them. As you said, it wasn't world class, but they went on the road to Venezuela and beat a team 2-0 without having really very many question marks from it. Yes, they were shaky in the first 15 minutes. Beyond that, they really didn't suffer at all. This feels like a group that, for the most part, Grêmio should be very successful in, especially based on what we saw from Guarani and Iquique. So I think professional is going to be the word for Grêmio going forward. At home, they're probably going to be more impressive than they are away, obviously. But a very good result for them, and I think this is one that they'll be very pleased with.
No, well, we sort of did earmark them to be top in this group. Okay, so moving swiftly along, we'll move into the next game, which was Lanús against Nacional. Nacional coming away with a 1-0 win in Argentina. Nico, yourself, I know you watched this one. It's not been a fantastic week for Argentinian sides. What were your thoughts on this game?
Well, it was very surprising to see Lanús being beaten by Nacional. Obviously, Nacional have been very good since the last Copa Libertadores, where they reached the quarterfinals, losing to Boca on penalties. But this game was one that Lanús should have won, especially after the form that they showed beating River Plate in the Super Cup only a month and a half ago, I think. Besides, yesterday, Nacional couldn't get to the training field due to the feminist protest in the capital, in Buenos Aires. Yeah, it looked like Lanús had the momentum and they had the Libertadores mystique on their side. They didn't sell all the tickets for the match, and they played really badly. I think it was not their best display. The 4-3-3 was used, but a couple of selfish decisions from Jose Sanz, number 9, who tried to score his goal, where in situations where maybe he could have let teammates score. Lanús could never find the true form that they had demonstrated over the summer, and Nacional capitalized on that. And they did very well. They got a crucial away victory. Now looking to see what happens, because this was a very worrying Lanús display, especially considering that they are the Argentine champions and that they should have done better, especially with the players that they have.
Yeah, I agree with Nico that, yeah, in this game, Lanús never really got going. Although I think you have to give credit to Nacional, Martin Lasarte, who managed Universidad de Chile and Universidad Católica here in Chile in recent years. I think he did a good job on Lanús today. He seemed to cut off the supply to the wings, and Nacional used the wings themselves quite well. Luis Espino, he put an impressive performance. He kind of linked well with the defence and midfield for Nacional. They got the goal in the first half in front of their travelling fans. You know, Montevideo to Buenos Aires, yeah, it's a short distance, so they have plenty of supporters in the stadium.
Yeah, they probably took the bus all the way to Buenos Aires.
But the one thing I really want to point out in this game is the Lanús goalkeeper, Andrada. He's not their usual number one. Their usual number one, he damaged his cruciate ligaments in December. Andrada, well, is a bit of a clown, really. It replaced him. I'm quite a fan of sweeper keepers, to be honest, if they can play a bit with their feet. But this guy couldn't. He looked like No, he looked like a duck.
Those are the best kind of sweeper keepers.
Yeah. He looked like he had spent the day watching René Higuita videos, and he was desperate to play near the halfway line. He almost gave away 3 goals. He, at one point, he came charging out of his area at about 40, 45 yards from goal, got nowhere near the ball, and just cleaned a Nacional striker out completely. He was probably lucky not to see red. But yeah, it was kind of It's just all part of the package, really, of Lanús tonight. Very, very disappointing display from the Argentine champions. I wasn't surprised that Nacional put in a decent performance and won. I think I said on the pod last week, I fancy them to have a run in this competition this year. And it was a great start from them. I think we'll be speaking a lot more about them as the tournament goes on.
Go ahead.
I don't know about you, but in my case, I saw a very nervous Lanús side, like trying to make a very good impression, and perhaps they needed something else. Like I said already, Sand desperately trying to score a goal, or Andrada trying to disable the opposing attacking force. Very strange, really. I hope for something better from the Argentine side. Of course, Nacional did very well. They capitalized on Lanús's very generic side, in my opinion. No standouts in the Uruguayan roster, apart from a very stodgy defense with Bolentan for Chile, which are very, very fun names, at least to me. Yeah, very strange moves by the Lanús manager, Almirón, playing Pasquini instead of Nicolás Aguirre. During the second half, Lanús looked much better. They got the ball and they started dominating the game. They kind of locked Nacional in their own box, so they were very unlucky not to score there. But it looked like it was a little bit too late. You can't do in 20 minutes something that you have not done in the full 90.
Yeah, I think that there was two big question marks really going into this week. One was how were Lanús going to cope without the departure, Miguel Amorim. And
easy for you to say.
Yeah, I just felt that they lacked that kind of bit of genius maybe in the final third of the pitch from what I saw of them last year. And I think he did end up being quite a big miss to this Lanús side. And obviously the other question mark, and maybe it's something you've already touched on, was, you know, the fact that the Argentine league has been late starting. None of the Argentine sides got off to a particularly great start in this Libertadores, apart from Tucumán, who obviously had that experience in the Copa Libertadores qualifying rounds. And they probably looked the sharpest of the Argentine sides I saw. So I found that kind of an interesting narrative this week.
Nico, would you agree with that? Is this what we're seeing? I know that the league in Argentina, I think there's been a deal done now. Maybe you can inform us of that as well. But do you feel that, you know, we touched on it with Simon there, with San Lorenzo, who were terrible. There's no getting away from it. They really were terrible. I don't like saying that about any team. But is it this lack of competitive football that has really cost Argentina?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the league. The league was delayed like 3 months ago after the AFA is in crisis and they can't pay their players. Yesterday, apart from the money that the government has already provided, a very important media company appeared and provided the rest of the money. So all the contracts, all the players have been paid and their wages are back to normal. The Argentine league resumed today with a thrilling match between Vélez and Estudiantes, which was 3-2. Very interesting match if you want to see the replay. And yes, I think that the delay has played a part in the Argentine side and their terrible form, because it has been terrible. I mean, look at San Lorenzo, Lanús, not knowing what to do with their local advantage. It is a major drawback for any big team, especially when coming against some of the most powerful rivals in the continent, like Flamengo and Nacional. Hopefully, now that the league is resuming, this situation will go back to normal and all our teams will get a little more experience, because you may play as many friendlies as you want against under 20 teams or even major teams, but it will never be the same when you come up against these sides who have worked the entire week trying to figure out how to beat you.
I saw the goals in that Estudiantes Vélez match, and it was a real howler, wasn't it, for the Vélez winner. Estudiantes, of course, are in this competition. They kick off next week against Botafogo, and that certainly is a far from ideal result heading into next week's opening match for them.
But the match fitness, Adam, do you think that will benefit them? You know what I mean? These teams, bar, as you rightly pointed out, took a man, haven't really had very much competitive football. Alex, we see River come in next week. We see Estudiantes come in next week. Do you feel that they're at a slight advantage, having played, obviously, at least a game now?
Yeah, like I said, I just feel that those extra games that Tucumán had already in this Libertadores, in the qualifying rounds, I think mentally and physically, they seemed a little bit more prepared than the other Argentine sides. The only one I missed was Godoy Cruz, and to be fair, it sounds like they did quite a good job as well. But I would say, looking at Lanús and the highlights from the San Lorenzo-Flamengo game, those two sides especially looked kind of very, very underprepared. So this week's round of fixtures in Argentina, yeah, it might just sort of wake up River in time for their match. They kick off against them in Medellin. You're going to that, aren't you, Simon?
Yeah, I'm hoping to. I was speaking to some of the Medellin barras, and apparently the south and the north are sold out. So it's going to be tricky to get a ticket, which is good. It's good to be packed stadium, but hopefully they find space for me. I might have to buy one from a tower outside the ground. But yeah, hoping to go to that game. Yep.
Well, listen, let's move on, and we'll move into, stay with you, Simon. The strongest beating Santa Fe of Colombia at 2-0. Strongest continuing on the fine form that they've shown in the three qualifying rounds. And, you know, okay, we've had the advantage of their home advantage, basically, of the altitude tonight. They're looking impressive.
Yeah, not so much tonight, though, honestly. Santa Fe should have won. They had 6 or 7 chances. Don't put this down to my Colombian bias, honestly. I'm very, very disappointed with the game and the result for Santa Fe. Santa Fe were stronger and quicker. The strongest had, like, in the first half, it was like 73-74% possession. So they had a lot of the ball, but they weren't really going anywhere. The first chance they had was the goal they scored in the second half, and that was completely the response, you know, the fault of William Tecillo, the Santa Fe defender. But basically, the strongest were wide, wide open at fullback. The centre backs were sitting quite deep, kind of protecting themselves from the long passes over the top. But the fullbacks pushed right on, pushed forward, which meant that any sort of diagonal pass, any sort of switch of the play meant Santa Fe had a wide open counter-attack. So Santa Fe had a massive opportunity here. They were sitting, they were defending really well. They haven't actually conceded for 1,000 minutes before this game. So they had in good defensive form in the league. They were stronger and quicker, and they were creating some chances, but 6 or 7 wide, wide open chances. Johan Aranjo up front missed some sitters. Every time they got a one-on-one with the fullback, or every time there was, you know, the counter was on, they were through on goal. But they just lacked a bit of quality in terms of finishing, in terms of the final pass. There was one chance where they had 3-on-1 defender, and they were coming from the right wing. They cut inside. You know, you think just square it and you'll score, but no, they cut inside. Okay, fine. Well, you cut inside and I'll shoot. Then he tries to make the pass straight into the one remaining strongest defender. So Santa Fe were an absolute disappointment for me. Now, I'm not going to say shambles, because they created lots of chances and were very solid for much of the game. Then the goal came from the strongest had a throw-in. They threw it down the wing. The Santa Fe player tied himself up and fell on his face. And the strongest pulled one across, and that man, Chumacero, tapped in from close range. The goal kind of came out of nothing, despite the fact the strongest had been dominant in possession. And then, again, it was against kind of more of the same. Santa Fe had more chances. And then in the end, the final goal came. It was those three men. It was Pablo Escobar, who, again, had a nice game. You know, was one of the difference. Plays it long, nice little through ball to Matias Alonso, cuts inside, touches it off to Chumacero, and he smacks it in. So he's scored in every game so far. I think he's got 6 goals in 5 games in the Libertadores. So he's as good as we all thought he was. He's showing that now. And again, it is a bit baffling that he's still playing in Bolivia when he looks so good. Again, for the national team, he's also played really well. So again, another man to watch. But overall, if Santa Fe had a Pablo Escobar to make that decisive final pass, or if they had a Chumacero to put the ball in the net, I think they would have won comfortably. In the end, very disappointing. They were quicker, they were stronger, they were more incisive, but they couldn't pull the ball in the net. So disappointing for Santa Fe. Again, going away to Bolivia, maybe it's not the 3 points you know you'd expect, especially when the strongest have looked so good so far. But the way the game unraveled and opened up, they will be very disappointed to not have put one of those chances away and got a result in the game tonight.
Yeah, I think I agree with Simon. I too had been incredibly impressed with the strongest so far in this competition, but I felt like Santa Fe should have done more in that first half. And when they didn't, you know, and then they, I thought Simon described the first goal from the strongest just about perfectly. That should, that type of situation should really never turn into a goal. And then it did. And who is it to put it away? It's Chumacero, of course. He's been fantastic in this competition. His goals tonight weren't necessarily impressive because of what he did, but because of the team elements, but still, two more goals for him, 6 and 5. You know, incredible to see from Chumacero. This is a big 3 points for the strongest because it was 3 points on a night when they didn't play all that well. And on a night when the result probably could have certainly been a little bit different. Santa Fe, I think, will be ruining their missed chances from this match because I think this is going to give the strongest that kind of extra foot forward to come out of this group potentially. So missed opportunity for Santa Fe. A good performance from the strongest, even though it wasn't not necessarily a good performance, but a good result for them to get the 3 points here.
Austin, I know you're a big fan of the strongest, but you know you've alluded to there they didn't play particularly well, still got a result. That's the type of thing that happens with teams need to ride their luck at times, and especially in a tournament like this. We've seen the good side of them. We've seen them through the 3 rounds of qualifying. They've been very, very, very good at some points in that. Do you think that it's just a blip? And, you know, obviously this is a different, we're into the group phases. Do you feel that was a blip? And do you think there's more to come from them?
Yeah, I definitely think there's more to come from them. And I think they'll take heart in the fact that even though they didn't look terribly impressive tonight, A, neither did Santa Fe, and B, neither did the other two teams in their group, Sporting Cristal or Santos, in the final match that we'll get to here in a second. So I think the strongest can feel very confident that they can play a large role in this group. I think they are among the top teams, if not the top team in this group. And even on an off night for them to still get 3 points, you know, that's just icing on the cake.
I would agree. I mean, like I say, they have two or three quality players who can open a game up. But I do think that they need to be careful with the opposition getting behind their fullbacks, because it happened 20 times maybe in the first half, and they don't have the pace to recover, and the centre-backs aren't particularly athletic either. So for me, if the manager's listening, you know, be careful. Heads up with your fullbacks, because that will be a big problem. There's a lot of teams, Brazilian teams in this tournament, teams, you know, from Ecuador who will target the wings and will target the fullbacks, and if the strongest play that way and have the two centre-backs so isolated, they're going to get torn apart against some more incisive teams. And Santa Fe almost did that tonight, but they messed up in the final third with the finishing and with the decision-making. So that's, for me, is a warning. But overall, it's a team that's won every game comfortably in the tournament so far, won every tie. And there's lots of positives, but I would put that as a big asterisk to be careful with the fullbacks and with the lack of pace tracking back.
Well, the strongest go to Santos next week, so I think we're really going to see what they're made of.
Santos is a team with the wingers that can take advantage of that, because that is how Santos play when they're playing well, is through those wings. So I think that's a very interesting matchup.
Right, well, listen, we're talking about Santos, so let's move into the last game, Austin. And Sporting Cristal, you know, Adam had spoken about that he'd seen them in Lima when he was there, and basically, he wasn't that impressed with them. I was tonight. From what I saw of them, Santos were actually very lucky to get away with a point here. Again, not the most thrilling game, but I think a point, Santos will be very, very happy going back to Sao Paulo with a point.
Yeah, I think they have to be. You know, this is a Santos team that I talked about when I previewed them, can tend to disappoint at times. And you just look at their squad, and it's really stunning to think that they would take a 1-1 draw from this match on the road against a Peruvian side, when you just look at the sheer talent that's there. Two strong defensive midfielders, three tremendous midfield playmakers. Ricardo Oliveira, an aging but still effective striker up top. All of the pieces are there, and it just didn't come together, and it hasn't come together at all in 2017 for them, domestically, in the State League, or here. So this is a result that they'll probably have to be happy with. Sporting Cristal might feel a bit hard done here. I thought once Santos scored through Thiago Maia in the 67th minute, I thought then they were the better side, and they could have snatched it late and taken the 3 points. But on the whole, another disappointing effort from Santos. I thought Sporting Cristal, they looked like an okay side here, and Santos just didn't necessarily impress me. Adam, I know you saw some of this as well. What did you think of Santos, and what do you see them kind of in the bigger context of this group?
I thought that Santos were disappointing in the first half, especially. And I was surprised at just how well Sporting Cristal played. But in that second half, Santos came back into the game and they were the better team for a good sort of 20 minutes or so. And it felt like, and the Santos manager made a couple of attacking changes as well. So you're thinking at that point, you know, Santos is smelling blood and they're going to sneak it. But in the end, you know, they needed their goalkeeper to make two huge saves from Rolando Blackburn, the Panama striker that we mentioned on the pod last week, to keep them level in this game. Again, I thought they did well to get a point result-wise, but again, it was a disappointing performance overall. As for their chances going forward in this group, I still expect Santos and the strongest to get out of it. Santa Fe, it sounds like, may have blown their best opportunity tonight.
Yeah, no, on this game, I think Santos won massively impressive, but Lucas Lima, man, I love Lucas Lima. I haven't seen that much of him, but it was a real joy to watch him tonight. A proper playmaker, just always wanting the ball, pinging passes, reverse passes. He's one of those players where you watch some games and you think, oh, go on, make that pass over there, and he's already on it straight away. And there's also these passes where it's like, I wonder if he could make that. Oh, he's made the pass. And for me, it was a joy to watch. He's a bit of a genius. And the goal, the little dink through Thiago Maia, controlling it high up in the air and then putting away. Yeah, a moment of quality from Santos there. But again, it was a very even game that swung back and forward in terms of advantage. So again, I think they'll be happy to come away with a point saved by the goalkeeper. But yeah, I'm definitely going to be tuning into all of the Santos games just to get a glimpse of a bit of genius playmaking from Lucas Lima in the midfield.
Quick one for Austin. Yeah, you've mentioned there, you know, you look at Santos's team. Yeah, it's impressive on paper, but not so much on the pitch. I know that they've not been going particularly well in the State League. This is a slightly disappointing result tonight as well. Is the manager there at Santos going to come under pressure soon? And even like during this group stage, we may see a change of manager.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised by that. Like I said, it's been a disappointing start to the State League, and when you run on two or three disappointing months, that's definitely when the pressure starts to ratchet up for you. Dorival Jr., I thought, was very good in charge of Santos last year. You know, he lasted the entire year, which is not something that happens very often for managers in Brazil. Santos were a pretty good side. Their issue was just they gave away too many points to lower tier teams in the domestic league, and that kind of cost them and kept them out of a real title push at the very end. They did well to make this competition. I think that was really the goal for last year anyway. But they should be better than they are, and they should be better in the State League, and they definitely should be better in this group stage. I think that next week match between them and the strongest is one that you really have circled. We know that the strongest historically have not played well away from home, but we also are very aware of the fact that they have played well this year away from home. And so if Santos struggle in that match, I think there's definitely a possibility that Dorival Jr. could be under immense pressure, if not lose his job, based on what could happen in the state leagues around that time as well. So I think that's a really big match. If Santos come out and they play well and they win, then I think all can kind of be forgiven. That's happened so far this year. But if they struggle there, then I think the pressure is very much going to be on them.
And Lucas Lima, Austin, you know, you've said several times in this podcast about the drop-off in form in 2016. And, you know, Simon's saying there he seems to be back to his best. Do you think it's too late for him for Europe now? Like, he's not any younger. Do you still think he'll be on the radar if he can pull that form together and maintain that form?
He's such a fascinating case to me. 2 years ago, I thought he was the best player in Brazil. Last year, like I said, I thought he struggled at points. He also had moments where he just reminded you how good he is. You know, when you'd watch him play and you're just like, man, he's really good. He's a terrific number 10. But he's 26 now. And he's not left Brazil yet. He's played his whole career there. He's had some time in the national team. You know, he's started in the national team. I think he's definitely going to finish out this year with Santos. His contract is through 2018. You know, you finish out this year and then you're looking at a World Cup on the horizon and trying to make that squad. And to do that, he'll want to, you know, be getting match time. And so staying at Santos is probably better for that. And then he could be 27, 28 by the end of it. And I think he's certainly talented enough that in the right situation, he could absolutely thrive in Europe. But that situation hasn't come yet. And give him credit in that he said, you know, I'm going to stick it out here. He wanted to be successful at Santos first. He wanted to play in the Libertadores with Santos. He's doing that now. He hadn't had a chance to do that yet. I think he's there for the rest of this year for sure. Honestly, I could see him staying through the first half of 2018 as well, just because of that upcoming World Cup, and you don't want to make a move and get into an uncertain playing time situation while trying to make a squad. So I think he could still be there for another year and a half, and then it's just a question mark going forward. But he's a really interesting player because I think he's a guy who has what it takes to play in Europe, but just through circumstances hasn't done it yet.
No, very interesting to see what happens with him. There was a stage I thought he was actually destined for Europe, but you know, when you put that age there, I think it's maybe just a bit. Maybe that ship has sailed. We'll keep an eye on it anyway. But listen, guys, we've managed nearly 2 hours, I suppose. It's time to bring it to a close. As always, I'll just run around the table with any plugs or mentions or anything you want to do. I'll start with Simon, who I know has a lot to plug. Very good article, a very good interview you did this week, Simon. Feel free.
Yeah, no, this week I've done some stuff on my local team, but it's a local team that I think is very interesting. I had an article on the website and an interview with the sporting director from Envigado. So Envigado is one of the best producers of youth players in South America. They've had over 10, they've had basically on average one international player come through the academy per year. James Rodriguez, Quintero, Dolan Pavon, Gio Moreno, you know, many, many others. Frank Fabra, who's playing for Boca now. So basically half of the Colombia team began their careers at Envigado. So had an interview with the sporting director to talk about some of the philosophies, some of the strategies that they have to develop players. Very interesting. Lots of focus on personal development as well as professional development. So that's an interesting one. And also on the website, I profile some of those players who've come through and have a look at 5 players I think will do well and are on the way to Europe in the near future. On Twitter, at Simon Edwards SAF. So there's links to all that stuff on there.
And I'll say, we have a new website, just in case you didn't know. And if you haven't visited it, go ahead. It's very impressive stuff. I know nothing about that type of thing. I'm only doing podcasts, but I'm very impressed with it. And there's some great content, including that of Simon's and many others as well. And we will be continuing with that theme from here on in. So if you haven't taken notice of that, please go and give us a look at www.worldfootballindex.com. There'll be something there to suit you. Adam, yourself, where can we find you? What are you doing apart from making great videos for the Copa Libertadores?
You can find me at Kanija Scores. There, you know, I'm always updating on whatever South American match I'm watching at the time, whether that be in Chile or somewhere in the Copa Libertadores, or even possibly the Sudamericana, which is also going on at the moment. And looking forward to the World Cup qualifiers coming up in a couple of weeks. We have shows for you around the South American qualifiers for that. That's going to be exciting. Chile, Argentina, obviously the highlight of the next round. But I think there's also Uruguay, Brazil. So yeah, it should be some fascinating chat on that. You know, check out Simon's pod. You know, he's got a fascinating interview there with the Envigado sporting director. That's this week's edition of the South American Football Show. And in that is also some extra bits about what the goings on in Colombian football at the moment, which is also pretty interesting. Also, you know, you've got the Germany 2006 World Cup pod that we've done recently. and many, many more things on the World Football Index feed. And if you like these shows, then, you know, be sure to write a review on iTunes and give us, you know, 5 stars and give us some love.
Yes, because we deserve it and we need it. And also you can subscribe there to us on SoundCloud as well. Means you'll never miss a podcast because we will be continuing these. And as Adam said, we have the World Cup qualifiers coming up. We will be covering that as well, all things South American. Nico, yourself, thank you very much for being on again tonight. Where can we find you? Where can we find your work?
Well, it's been great again, so thank you for inviting me. You can always find me at @Miramont_Nico. I tweet about all sorts of stuff. I'm currently working on some articles about South American football. I'm trying to beat procrastination at the moment, so stay tuned for that. They will be up eventually someday. Apart from reviews, remember to share our content, share these podcasts with your friends. It's very important so that we can gain more audience and more feedback. It's very important for us. So thank you for inviting me. It's been great again.
You're most welcome, and hopefully you can stick with us for the rest of the tournament. And yourself, Austin, where can we find you apart from the West Coast? And what are you working on?
I am at Austin_James906 on Twitter. Lots of South American and Libertadores and Brazilian live tweets. Haven't done too much with the new website yet. Very excited to, though. Things will be calming down here for me in the next couple of weeks. University, so going to be a lot more opportunities to do a lot of writing, something I haven't done in a while. So looking forward to that, you know, hopefully some previews once we get around towards the Brasileirão, who to watch out for, players to keep an eye on, etc. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to another week of Libertadores football, and those World Cup qualifiers are going to be very, very interesting because getting down to the end of it now in CONMEBOL, if you're going to make a move, it's time to make it now. So very intrigued by those. I think those are going to be a great set of matches. Brazil-Uruguay, I think especially, is going to be great. And Brazil playing in Sao Paulo as well is going to be fascinating to watch.
Indeed. Any word on who's going to be taking Gabi Jesus' place? Please tell me it's not Firmino.
It's not going to, I don't think so. I think it's going to be Diego Sosa from Sport. He played well in the Brazil-Colombia one-off game in January. I think Cheech likes what he brings. I think he's kind of in that same vein. So I think Diego Sosa is going to get the start in the number 9 shirt for Brazil. Always great to see a guy playing, not just playing domestically, but playing in the Nordeste. He's going to get that spot with the national team. Don't see that very often in these times. So great to see. I think he's going to take it, and I think he's going to do pretty well.
Well, hopefully we get some kind of a result. I say even a loss, it's not the end of the world. But listen, we'll leave it at that. For myself, I'd like to plug the Don't Call It Soccer podcast, because it's causing me to write an article, actually, for the new website. Jesse and I are writing counterpieces on, basically, the pod's called Tuputo or Not Tuputo, that is the question. And it's whether or not, or how offensive the chant of Puto at goalkeepers is in sort of Mexican football and Latin football. I really don't see much harm in it. Jesse sees a lot of harm in it. So we're doing a sort of counterpiece on that, which could be sparky, but it'll be a bit of fun. Other than that, just thank you very much for listening, as always, to your Copa Libertadores show. We will be back again next week. And just a massive thanks to the guys for their time, as always, whether it be for written or the podcast or whatever they're doing. They're all working very incredibly hard. So thank you for that. And until next week, just leave me to say thank you and goodbye.